You know, there's something you got to observe when you're standing in line for the Zip and Pippin. You got to watch something. If you don't know what the Zip and Pippin is, it's Elvis's favorite roller coaster that is now in Green Bay, Wisconsin at Bay Beach, and it is wooden and it is rickety. And when you get there and you stand in line, you see people in line, they're laughing, they're talking, they're having a good time. But what you don't sometimes notice is the people that get back from riding the roller coaster, that they are like hair whipped back. They're kind of wide-eyed in shock, and they're like, whoa, what did I just experience? So if you are really paying attention, you're kind of asked the question, do I dare step off this platform and get into the roller coaster? Today, someone else is going to warn us to watch our steps. Not into a roller coaster, but coming to church. Do you know what you're getting into? Not the wind-whipped hair or wide-eyed or whoa, but what it is to be standing in the awe of the glory of God. So let's find out this morning how to guard our steps, how to understand what we're really getting into. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 1 through 7. There's a call and response. Make sure you look at that too. It's a little different than normal, so look at that. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they are doing evil. Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God, for God is in heaven, and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few, for a dream comes with much business, and a fool's voice with many words. When you vow a vow to God, do not delay paying it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin. Do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity. But God is the one you must fear. Herein is wisdom. Well, if you're just joining us, welcome. We've been going through this book of Ecclesiastes, which explores what is the meaning of life. And through this quest of Koheleth, in Hebrew, meaning teacher or preacher, or some would even say philosopher, he experiences the things of life, squeezing everything he can out of it. And so far, we've seen him seek the experience of pleasure and work. And through finding all the aspects of these things, he is finding you can't find ultimate meaning in them. They are, like he wants to say over and over again, vanity. Vanity, smoke, vapor, an enigma, something you just can't hold on to find meaning in these things. Again, he uses these words under the sun, that the idea that you can't see anything that's transcendent, anything that is eternal. He's just looking at what is temporal, what is physical, what is in this world. He's exploring what is under the sun, all that is in the material world. Again, in that, he is finding it is vanity, a vapor, an enigma to find ultimate meaning. Well, we are right, good Christians, right? So we have been jiving with this so far. Yeah, you're right, Koheleth, you're right. You can't find ultimate meaning in work or pleasure. Preach it. But now, Koheleth goes to church. He is now in the old days, the temple, the modern days, the church. Surely, you can't go to church and just see what's under the sun, right? thing is, I think this is where Koheleth is pressing. Here are these card-carrying Israelites that stroll up to the temple saying, I'm good. I'm part of these people. I do this religious thing. And they're what you would say in civil religion. It's just part of their life. Without understanding what they're doing when they go to temple, when they go into the presence of God, that there is something transcendent. Can we too walk into church just seeing what's under the sun rather than seeing what is above the sun? You have to realize that there's not something that magically happens when you walk in the doors of this church. It doesn't magically you see God in above the sun. His words of guarding your steps is probably good words for us and how we prepare ourselves when we come to this place. That the fool and the folly that's mentioned in this chapter happens when you go to church and you miss the grand point of who God is and what he is doing. If you read the Gospels, this is a constant theme of Jesus, that people that are living in Israel at that time, that are religious, that go to the temple, do they really see what God is all about? That Jesus says there will be a time where the wheat and the weeds will grow together, meaning they can be in that place in Israel, but ultimately some are not followers of Jesus and some are. That the day will come where he will be able to separate those things. The same can be said about people that come to church. So what's a way that a fool goes to the temple or to church and does not see what is above the sun? Two ways. Number one, believing your words are more important than God's. And number two, coming to God with your own agenda. Let's look, shall we? He says in the first verses, we'll take it into two sections here, verses 1 through 3 and then 4 through 7. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they are doing evil. Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God, for God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few, for a dream comes with much business and a fool's voice with many words. I don't think they're saying that sacrifice is bad, but the sacrifice of fools is bad. That they come and give a sacrifice, but they do not realize what they are doing when they do it. That they give many words, in their words, they are actually still doing evil. The sad observation that Koheleth is making is these people think that they are doing right because they are making sacrifice, while at the same time, they are doing evil. That they're coming with many words to tell God what is up rather than listening to what God is saying to them. Rather than listening that God is the one that knows that he is in heaven and they are on earth, they are the ones that think they know how it works. That is a very sad perspective. That we can come to this place saying, I know God, what is up, and I'm going to give you many, many words. When I was going to Denver Seminary, I worked at the bookstore at Denver Seminary, and when I was behind the counter, a guy came up with a Denver Broncos jersey on. Of course, being a Packers fan myself, I gave him a little bit of a talking because the Broncos had just lost that week on this last-minute field goal that was missed. And I said, you know, I think if they would have, like, taken time out, I was just talking football, and, you know, maybe the kicker would have done something a little different, it would have been better. The guy was nice. He was very gracious, and he bought his books, and he left. And my boss came up to me afterwards and said, do you know who you just said that to? I said, no. That's Jason Elam, the kicker for the Denver Broncos. I think he's a pastor now. He was taking classes at Denver Seminary. You laugh, but that's the same thing we do. God, I have advice for you. I have words for you. I come into this place with that attitude. Rather than entering his house and listening to what he says. And he uses this parallel, this poetic structure here. Dreams come with much business. I think the idea here is that when you are stressed or have toil, that you dream a lot. You're processing it in your head, is I think what is being said here. Just in the same way that air conditioning rattling comes with much heat. And then he makes this parallel that the fool's voice comes with many words. Qoheleth is pointing the irony of this whole situation. You come to a place to find meaning, to find what's above the sun, to see things that you cannot see yourself. Instead of listening to what is above the sun, you instead give your own words. There is the famous parable of two men walking in New York City. And there's ambulances and cars and taxis and all these things and people. And one of the men says, I hear a cricket. And the other man says, no way. You can't hear a cricket. And they walk across the street. And he crouches down and on a light post, he picks up the cricket. And the other man says, you must have superhuman ears. And the man with the cricket says, my ears are no different than yours. It all depends what you were listening to. And the man just reached into his pocket, pulled out some coins, and threw them on the ground. And there in the city of New York, people turned around and heard the coins dropping. That analogy might not hold up in an era where coins don't matter at all. But I wonder about our cell phone. When it beeps, when you hear a vibration, I see what we all do. Is that mine? Do we listen? See, under the sun, we're bombarded with many different sounds. What podcasts we listen to, what opinions we hear in the paper, what we think about different things from our tribes. But are we ready to listen to the voice of God? What he says to us. That he has given us his word. He's given us his spirit to illuminate the word to us. That we come to the church, we have a chance to again hear his word and his truth through scripture, through confession, through prayer. Again, I'm not attacking our speaking in church or singing and whatever it might be, but that we would not do it with much haste, with arrogance or impatience, rather than just hearing from God. Are we people that truly listen? Or are we busy playing church rather than being shaped by what is above the sun? I get it. Church is a great place to come. There's social time. There's good music. This guy giving a good TED talk or whatever it might be. But really, the God of the universe is speaking to you. And he is challenging your behaviors, your passions. He's challenging the things that you are clinging to under the sun. Will you listen? A lot of us have been doing this, seeing Jesus together. And in the seeing Jesus together, They give a time to just authentically submit to the Lord and His Word. That you would just quiet yourself. Say, God, would Your Word speak to me? Would it shape me? And then we take time to meditate on an Old Testament passage and a New Testament passage and sit and listen to what God might have to us in His Word, to write down what God is doing in our lives. I would encourage you, it's a great thing to do. But to see Jesus, you need to sit and listen. You might need to wake up in the morning and not turn your cell phone on until after you've sat and listened to Him. When you vow a vow to God, do not delay paying it, for He has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin, and do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity. But God is the one you must fear. Now he moves to God, these promises that people would make, and there are probably many promises in Israelite culture that we do not have vows of today. Today, these vows for us might look like marriage vows. Vows that we make of raising a child in the Lord at baptism. Vows of being members of a church. He's not warning against making vows. He's warning against not fulfilling vows. And this language of what's better is a better way to live, not to do one that takes, not to do a vow if you're not going to fulfill it. That these messengers will see those that you made the vows in front of. You think of it as the witnesses at your wedding or those that witnessed you having your child baptized or becoming a member of a church. See, it shows a bigger problem that people are entering the house of God saying, I'll do this and I'll do that. But they don't realize that there is something above the sun. There's a God that is listening to them and sees they do not fulfill the vows that they said they would. That it is a big deal that they enter into His presence and they are not living by it. I know when talking about vows, specifically marriage vows, it can be a very touchy subject in the church. Many of you have been part of very, very hard situations, and I do not want to be trite about those at all. And I'm not going to give an excursus, a long speech about marriage and divorce and exceptions and all those things. Not doing that now. If you want to have conversations about that, we'd love to have conversations about that. But I do want to say we take marriage vows seriously. When you stand in front of your friends, in front of your family, and before God and say, for richer or poorer, in sickness or health, till death do us part, and as we say, as the Book of Common Prayer said classically at the very end, when I lead and officiate wedding ceremonies, I have the couples say this at the end. This is my solemn vow. I just find it very intriguing that God has set up this institution where He's called us to love one person well, a person that we like, at least at marriage, when we get married at the wedding day. It says, I want you to try to love this person. And we make vows to do it. And then sometimes I hear people say, well, that vow doesn't really apply to me and this situation I'm now in. As they struggle and wrestle in their marriage. It takes all of me not to say, and I want to say this in the most gracious way I can, is there not a holy God that you stand in front of, that you made vows in front of, that knows it right now? He knows what you need to grow in patience, in your selflessness, in your gentleness, in your self-control. The one person that you said you would commit to for the rest of your life, that you love, that you're intimate with. And actually, the struggle is causing you to be in front of that holy God, to work on that vow with you. It doesn't just happen in marriage. It happens when you make vows to the church. Many of you are members of this church, and I want to remind you of the vow that you made. One of them is, by the grace of the Holy Spirit, to live as is a follower of Christ. You made that vow. And then when other people in the church might gently correct you, have you thought about how you talk to others? Have you thought about how you deal with your anger? Have you thought about how you spend your money? Have you thought about how this thing in your life has become an idol and an addiction? And then when you're confronted by those things, you might say, well, that doesn't apply to me. Do you remember the vow that you made before the church, before God? And then how about the vow to our children? That some of you, right in front of all of us, you made this vow. You said, I promise to set before this child a godly example. How are you doing in that? And how you speak to your spouse? How do you speak to your child? How you spend your Sunday? How you worship God yourself? You see, what Koheleth is saying is that you say everything is all under the sun. There's no God watching. And if there is no God, if there is nothing above the sun, why fight? Why struggle? Why hold to anything or any vow? So when you come to the house of God and you believe that there is a transcendent God that knows you and loves you, maybe you should be slow to speak. It is hard to fulfill a vow. And when you realize that it's hard to fulfill, you start facing up to a transcendent God. It allows you to start relying upon Him. If you come to church and you're doing all this singing and all this pious talk and all this whatever ritual that sometimes Sunday morning is, and you are breaking those vows, what are you doing? Some of you might be scaring you, right? Well, if that's the way it is, I won't say anything. I won't make any vow. God is saying, I want to dialogue with you in fulfilling it. I want to work with you in what you are doing, that you are standing under me, that I am with you, that in your fulfilling the vow, even though it's hard and it's difficult, it shows a watching world that you think there is actually a standard. There is actually a holy God, that even when it's very difficult in your marriage, in relationships with people in church, with your children, that you continue in it, and people say, how do you do it? How do you keep going? You would say, because I believe there is a holy God that is working in me and giving me the strength and the power to continue, that I am not alone, that there is something above the sun. Something more than just my own happiness. You know, Ecclesiastes sometimes gets a very bad rap. It's depressing. Sometimes it's flippant. Eat and drink, and tomorrow you die. Many argue it's an early form of existentialism. If you don't know what that means, is that human life is defined not by something outside of oneself, but by one's individual choices. What one chooses is what constitutes their identity, not God, but the self. I would argue that Ecclesiastes is doing the opposite. What it's doing is it's running us through experiments of existentialism in ourselves to show us that way of living is meaningless. And even ways that we do that in going to church. You've heard me say this often, I'll say it again. Church is a horrible hobby. Why you would come to this for, like, this is what I do on Sunday morning, I do not understand. It's not a good hobby. In the 19th century, there was another man accused of being flippant and depressing. His name was Soren Kierkegaard. In Denmark, he was in a very high Christian culture. And Kierkegaard loved to run people through experiments, through his poetry, in his philosophy, in his stories, to wake people up. And he would say this often among, he's a strong Christian, among Christians that kind of flooded Denmark. He said, one became a Christian without noticing it. Everything became as simple as pulling up one's socks, is what it meant to become a Christian in Denmark. And he observed, like Koheleth, like the teacher, I live like there was just what was under the sun. And Kierkegaard really became a Christian missionary to Christians in creating difficulties for Christians. Christians that viewed their religious commitment as going to church twice a year or going through a confirmation class or a catechism class and then I'm good. And what Kierkegaard was perplexed by is that how God, in becoming human to save us from our sins, could just be assumed. That for the people in Denmark, it was just trivial and easy to believe this grand thing that God had done. And what Kierkegaard saw happening to that country has come to fruition. There's a state church in Denmark, if you did not know. Do you know that 70% of people in Denmark are members of the state church? But only 3% regularly attend church. And only 28% believe in God. Although that 70% of the whole country is a member of the church. It does beg the question for us in the United States, where over 60% of Americans identify with Christianity, and where Christians' divorce rates are almost equal to non-Christians, where their giving is almost equal to non-Christians, where their addictions seem to be very similar. Is this a game or is it real? My friends that sometimes come to church here, my neighbors, we have good conversations. They, you know, I'm a pastor and I do this pastor thing. And they come, and they've been steeped in religion and been baptized and all those things and do not go to church anymore. And when they're done going to this church, they say to me, I find it very intriguing. You actually believe this is real. That is what Qoheleth is saying. It's real. It's not vanity, vanity. It's not meaningless, meaningless. Do you realize that you stand in awe of a holy God? Well, if you're just visiting us this morning, this might seem very heavy. And you might say, great. How can I approach God? Do I want to approach a God like that? I've said all kinds of nonsense. I've made all kinds of vows. I have fallen short in all kinds of ways. Where is there hope for me? Jesus is with his disciples and he tells this wonderful parable about people going to a temple. Two people going to a temple. One was who you expected to go to the temple, a Pharisee. And he used lots of words when he was in the temple. He tithed. He attempted temple more than once a week. And then he said in front of God, "Thank you, Lord, that I'm not like all of these sinners." And then Jesus tells of another man, one that you would not expect to go to the temple, one that people looked down upon, a tax collector. And while the Pharisee used many words, the tax collector used very few, and we actually sung them this morning. God be merciful to me. And when Jesus was done telling the story, you would expect him to say, "Which one do you think is justified?" to his disciples. I tell you, the one that is justified is the one that felt like he couldn't even approach the temple. It was the one that used few words. It was the one that people had said, "No way." The tax collector is the one that goes away justified. I usually give my point at the beginning. I'll give it here now at the end and let it land. The one who fears God humbles himself to God's voice and God's leading instead of their own. That is the picture of our holy God. The picture of our holy God is that he died for us, that he came for us. Even when we were yet sinners, Christ died for us so that we, vow breakers, people that use many, many words, would know that we have a God that still loves us even when we have fallen into sin. I'll tell you, that is what makes me fear God. That he loves me that much, that he did that much for me. That is what causes me to have awe. I wonder, when you come and take communion, do you guard your steps of what you're about to enter into? That you are coming to a God that gave his very life for you. That you are coming to a God that lived a way that you could not live. That you are coming to a God that is interceding for you right now. That you are coming to a God that says, "I want union with you so that I will help you fulfill your vows and to live that life that is hard to live now." And if you believe that, I hope you would guard your steps when you come forward, that it would not be just easy. That you would come in awe and fear of a wonderful and loving God.